Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Trench Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now as always, I'm joined by my colleague, Mike Neff, to talk about an interesting race weekend last week at Texas Motor Speedway. And then, Jeb Burton joins the show to discuss his top 5 performance in the Xfinity Series race at Texas in his first outing with Junior Motorsports. And obviously if you watched the race, Jeb showed a lot of emotion after the race, so we'll see where all that came from, as well as his thoughts on the 2020 Xfinity schedule. But like every week, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review to the Front Stretch Podcast. Those 5-star ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk some racing with Neff. All right, Neff, kind of an interesting race this past weekend at Texas. Denny Hamlin comes back from 2 pit road penalties, also missed pit road twice, coming to pit road to make a pit stop. But he comes back to win stage 2 and the race. What are your thoughts on that? Pretty impressive performance by the 11 team.
Yeah, it was one of those days where it looked like everything was conspiring against them, and even in the face of all negative odds, they were able to overcome and get the win. It's interesting, with this new package, it seems like it's opened up a lot more strategy calls than we had in the past. There's always been strategy, but it seems like a lot more people are taking a lot more chances. I don't know if it's because of Goodyear bringing some harder compounds, knowing that there was going to be higher speeds in the corners. I don't know if it's just a matter of, with the lower horsepower, people are feeling like they need to take more chances to be able to get in front of people. But whatever the case may be, there were a ton of different strategies in play. We ended up having people having to come to pit lane late for gas. And as a result, Hamlin was out in front when the checkered flag went in the air. So, yeah, we give credit, but, man, they have got to clean up the pit road speeding penalties. There's no way you're winning a championship if you keep doing that.
Yeah, I think, and we were talking off here, I think that's 4 in the last 3 weeks. And it does seem like every week for the past, like, 2 years or so that he, you know, the 11 team's getting some sort of penalty on pit road. Maybe not every week, but every other week for sure. And you make a lot of good points there as far as, like, the tire. I know that was a big talking point. Kevin Harvick, I don't know if you saw his quotes from the Ford, you know, PR that we got sent, but he said the tires suck every week. He said that after the race, and obviously he had a disappointing run in 8th. I mean, I guess that's good to be disappointed about in 8th. But yeah, you mentioned a lot of good points about Hamlin, too. In the strategy, you're right about that, because even, you know, the Xfinity race, too, if you got out front, you were very hard to pass. It didn't matter if you had no tires, 2 tires. Very rarely the leader had 4 tires. Hamlin took no tires twice to get out front and give him that track position. So I guess that's something to look forward to going forward. I don't know, Neff. It's kind of strange with how hard the tire is. Maybe I guess something does have to be done, because as we've talked about a lot on the podcast, the best races, in my opinion, are when tires fall off.
Yep. That's, I mean, we say it, we beat that dead horse all the time. We need tires that fall off and the ability for the car, a faster car behind, to be able to overtake the leader. And right now, it feels like we're the exact opposite end of the spectrum of that. We've had aero dependency with these cars forever, and it's not going to get better until they get them off the ground. And we've had boring races if we have these rock hard tires, and it feels like that's what they've had to go to because of this package. And so I've said it all season long, NASCAR's trying to make some changes, and we're changing a ton of stuff that I feel like we've just got to kind of ride out this year and then see what next year has to bring for us.
Yeah, as of this recording, which we're recording Tuesday morning, I haven't listened to this week's Dale Jr. download, but Steve Phelps is on it, so I'm kind of interested. I'm sure he has like an hour sit down with Jr. And see what he says, because like you said, a lot of changes this year. But what are your thoughts on Hamlin? Because, I mean, this is obviously his second win of the year. Last year went winless, of course, for the first time in his career. Hasn't finished worse than 11th this year, Neff, in his 6 top 10s in 7 races, so obviously, him and Chris Gabehart, very consistent together in their first year working together. I mean, I know we're only 7 races in, but could he be Kyle's biggest rival or Brad's biggest rival?
He's in the discussion as the top four or five guys that got a shot right now. There's no doubt about that. And we talked about it last week that Joe Gibbs and Penske are your two predominant teams, and there may be a couple others that slip into the mix, but right now it's those two and everybody else. And with Jones, I thought was going to have a shot at it, and I think he's going to get a win or two before the year's over. Obviously, Truex will get something here figured out before too long. So, I don't know. We'll see how it plays out, and as more teams get their arms around this package, if things get more competitive down the road. But right now, yeah, if you're looking at the Joe Gibbs team, obviously Denny and Kyle are the two main guys from a performance standpoint on the track. And Penske is their main rival outside of the JGR organization. But if Denny can get his act together on pit lane, he could be the most formidable guy in the sport, not Nate Bush.
It's been a weird start to the year in terms of it just being really Penske versus Gibbs. And even dating back to ISM Phoenix, the penultimate race of last year, they've won the last 9 races now. So definitely something again to look forward to, but for Hamlin, you know, I asked him at the Daytona 500 media day almost 2 months ago now, before he won Daytona, if he felt like he had something to prove this year because of how last year went. And of course he said, yes, he did have something to prove. And so far he's doing just that, 2 wins in 7 races after going winless last year, led 45 laps on Sunday, definitely going in the right way for the 11 team. Neff, I want to get your take, though, on a couple other drivers that also had good runs on Sunday. Clint Bowyer, Daniel Suarez. Suarez really impressed me on Sunday. Really was in the top 5 for the majority of the race. Led 9 laps. I feel like he needed that because that was his best finish with SHR since coming over this year. What's your take on that?
I mean, I've honestly felt like Suarez has been having a good year so far. They've had some bad luck that has impacted some of their finishes. But it seems like out of the SHR camp, they've been the fastest or second fastest almost every week. And it's just a matter of learning and getting the finishes put together. But he even made a comment, I believe it was either pre-race or post-race, about how he feels more comfortable with his team already this year than he has ever felt in the Cup Series. And it goes without saying that being comfortable with your team is key. Because your team has to respect and believe in you, and you have to respect and believe in them. We've talked about that with Logano before, that when he was at JGR, I just don't ever think he was respected because of the fact that he came in so young. And Suarez is similar. I mean, Suarez is pretty young. Plus, you've got the whole communication issue where, English is a second language to him. And that can be a barrier that you have to overcome. And it feels like their communication's really good. I think he's a very talented driver. And we've seen through most of his career, and it's one thing that I've always admired about Daniel, is he's a student. And he wants to suck up information so that he can get better. And most of the time, when they go to a racetrack and come back a second time, he's better. And it just seems like he continually gets better the longer he's working at it. And that's where I feel like in the long run, as he gets some age on him and gets some experience in his sport, he's one of those guys that I think could really turn into a superstar just because he learns and hangs on to what it takes to go fast in every single track.
Yeah, I echo a lot of your thoughts on Suarez. I'm a big believer in him as well, even back to his Xfinity days. You know, even his rookie year in 2015, and then 2016, obviously winning the Xfinity Championship. And one thing I really admire about him is how honest he is. Like you said last week, he talked to the media at Texas, and he was just super honest. And I had a conversation with him at Martinsville last fall, and that's when he was with the 19 team still. And he mentioned, you know, how he's learned so much about people that he didn't realize, you know, he knew about them, kind of in negative ways. He was kind of blasting Joe Gibbs in a way, in that whole organization, to a degree. So I think he's going to run really good this year. He's in obviously a fast car. Kurt Busch gets 1 or 2 wins per year in that car over the past few years. So I could definitely see him winning at least one race this year, and maybe even being the next first-time winner in his card. So, yeah, I mean, Suarez really, really impressed me on Sunday. I'll be honest, Clint Bowyer also surprised me a little bit because he didn't – I mean, he was pissed off. He gave maybe the interview of the year after qualifying on Friday. And he even said he was worried going into the race how his car would act in traffic and getting up to the front. And it seemed like on the long run at the end there, before they pit, he was going to catch Hamlin, and then Hamlin just got out of the pits better.
Yeah, definitely. They showed it with the graphics online, yeah, or on the race, of how the pit lane, Hamlin just did a better job getting in and out, and that ended up being the difference. But I think he had to. I think he was... I know he was mad about qualifying, but I also think he was a little embarrassed because of the fact that, yeah, Newman clogged up the middle, but had Bowyer handled his car better, he could have gone around him and it wouldn't have been a thing. And unfortunately, he had to, you know, he got himself kind of crossed up there and then let it all get into his head. So I think he felt like, yeah, there was a bigger problem there during qualifying, but I think he had a feeling, too, that he'd kind of let his team down. And so I think he was up on the wheel a little bit more, which we say that in the media all the time, and I know we even hear drivers say it sometimes, but I don't know how that happens. I mean, when you're in that environment and the hot and the speed and the G's and just everything that's going on, I don't know how you get up on the wheel anymore. I can't imagine how you're not constantly just up on the wheel as much as you can be every single lap. But whatever it was, it seemed like he got that extra little piece this weekend. And Bowyer can be that way sometimes. He especially in some of his earlier incarnations with other teams, had some moments where he would just kind of mail it in. And you can't do that and keep the trust of your team. And so I think he felt like he had to step up a little bit on Sunday, and he did. And he's kind of getting at a point with SHR where I think it's you know, it's not going to happen in the next year or two, but it's starting to be where he has to prove himself a little bit. I think he's had the time to get adjusted to the team now. He's won. It's time for him to step up and really start being a championship contender.
Yeah, and last year I thought that could be the case going to the playoffs because he had a really good regular season, won two races. And something Bowyer's always been, even with Childress, Michael Waltrip Racing, he's always been pretty consistent. And then this year, and you know, even the first year at Stuart Haas, really consistent. And maybe that was just kind of a feeling out process with Mike Bugga Ravage. I think I didn't butcher his name. yeah, good try. But you're right on a lot of the things you say. I think there's something to prove because you got Cole Custer waiting in the wings. And I mean, he's been sponsored by Haas his whole career. This year, Haas kind of took a step back in sponsoring him. But he's proven, you know, he's 20 years old, but I think he's cup ready. And he definitely will be after this year. This is his third year in the Xfinity Series. So, I mean, you just got Suarez. I don't think he's going to be going anywhere. You got Eric Almirola, who's running really good. The best stretch of races in his career right now. He's running good. And then Harvick. I mean, he said this past Friday in the media center that, you know, he's signed through 2021 because the old rumors that he was going to replace DW in the booth next year came out. And he put an end to that real quick. Yeah, I mean, I think Clint also has to perform in, you know, we're going to Bristol this weekend where he probably should have won the night race last August, and then they had a bad pit stop and he finished fifth. So he is definitely has something to prove. Now, Stuart Haas Racing as a whole, though, I mean, they don't have a win this year. Last year they had 12, Harvick had 8, and in that same press, you know, the media sheet that came out, he was pissed about the result on Sunday, saying that they really haven't had a race-winning car all year. They haven't been in contention to win. Just a super honest and frustrated Harvick, it looks like, came out after the race on Sunday.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that we praised them last year for the fact that they had reorganized the way they made race cars. And they brought Tony Gibson into the shop and had him in the shop full-time. and he was overseeing the production of the cars to make sure everything was identical across the board. And last year, fortunately, the way they had it figured out, everything identical across the board meant everything was really fast. And this year, everything identical across the board has meant they're not that fast. So they're still figuring out this new package, and it's going to take it a little bit. But once they do, it'll be, I think you'll be back to last year where they're going to get it. They're going to get it. They're going to come off the truck fast with all four cars, and it's going to get back to them dictating races and dictating who wins. And that will be interesting to see how close to the end of the regular season that happens. Because if it happens by the end of June, then you got a real good chance of three of their four drivers winning races, if not all four. If it happens in August, then you're scrambling and you may get one or two drivers to get a win. Everybody else has got to be worrying about points. So it's curious to me how long it takes them to figure this car out, but I still feel like with the production model that they have in place, once they figure it out, you're going to see all four cars be fast again, and they're all going to be in contention to win.
Yeah, and it's not like the four teams struggling real bad. I mean, they're third in points, so there's nothing.
Yeah, but they haven't. If you think about it, what races they've really been in contention to win this year?
Yeah, I mean,
they went to Phoenix. Yeah. And they were lousy, and that's the four team.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Phoenix, you know, it's Kevin Harvick's playground, and he was like eighth or ninth all day. This past weekend, I mean, just think of last fall at the November Texas race. Harvick dominated. I mean, it was a really boring race because how good the four car was. And then this week they come out, and they're just, I mean, really, he finished eighth, but he ran outside the top 10 for a lot of the race. So, and he was the worst of the four Stewart Haas cars. You know, granted, they all finished in the top eight. So, I don't know, maybe we're overplaying this. I don't know. I don't think we are, though, because you look at Eric Almirola, and he's, like I said, he's on a stretch of six straight top tens. Great start to the year for him, but it just seems like he can't get over that hump. He really can't. You know, he can run in the top five early in the race, but then he just kind of, you know, falls back to about six to eighth.
Yep, I agree.
But I mean, it's good for him. It's got to give him some confidence because he does have six straight top tens, so eventually you would think, in theory, that's going to go top fives and then possibly wins. And we're going to Bristol this week, and I would say really any of those four cars could win.
Yeah. I mean, once you get back to a short track, you take aero out of it some, although as fast as we're going in these cars, there's always some aero. But at Bristol, you're able to move around enough, and there's enough racing opportunities that you can overcome ill-handling cars. So it's back to good old-fashioned short track racing. You know Harvick will have a shot, but I've learned it when I used to do the fantasy column years ago for Front Stretch, and Harvick is not as good at Bristol as you have in your mind. There's been a couple stretches where he was really good, but for the most part, he's not that strong compared to other tracks for Harvick's resume. So he'll be in the mix, I think, but I'm with you. I kind of think Bowyer and Suarez are the two that are going to have a real shot this weekend at grabbing a win.
Right. And we just talked a lot about Stewart Haas. I want to move over to Hendrick now, Neff, because last week we kind of buried him because of how poorly they ran.
We never talked about Hendrick enough.
Yeah, right? Well, I mean, just think 1 week ago at Martinsville, how poorly they ran. Jimmy Johnson got lapped three times, finished the race two laps down. This week, a flip switch or something magical happened because they get to a mile and a half track when Jimmy Johnson gets his first pole since July 2016. It's, I think, Chevrolet's first pole at a mile and a half in 25 races. So something happened because William Byron and Chase Elliott were second and third, and the whole top five were Chevys, so maybe it's not just a Hendrick thing, maybe it's a Chevy thing. And then they really, I mean, Johnson and Byron ran top five, top six, pretty much the whole race. Johnson led 60 laps, which is the most he's led in a single race, Neff, in 2 years since Bristol of 2017. That's kind of incredible to think about.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about some of the tracks where Johnson is that good, Texas being one of them, and they just haven't been able to find anything since early in 2016. I mean, I realize he won the championship at the end of that season, but that was, they kind of got lightning in a bottle right at the end of the year there to pull that off. They were strong at the beginning of the year, won three races in like the first seven or eight, I think. But after that, they were just out to lunch, and 17 and 18, they've been awful. So it's a good sign for Hendrick. We've talked about the fact that, you know, Mr. H, there's no way he's been happy with what's been going on. I did get a kick out of listening to the broadcast this weekend, and I think it was Larry McReynolds was talking about the fact that there wasn't really a leader at Hendrick since Jeff Gordon left.
Yeah.
And that Jeff Gordon would have gone in and demanded answers or what was going on. And I'm like, I mean, I'll give Jeff credit for being a leader, but there's nobody there that needs to go in and demand answers other than Mr. H. I promise you, if you're not performing there, you're not worried about disappointing anybody besides Mr. Hendrick, because he is very hands-on. He knows everybody. He is in the shops. He is talking to these people. And if you're not getting the job done, you're worried about disappointing the man in the big office, not anybody else. So I give credit that Jeff was indeed a leader of that group, and that maybe there's not somebody that's a vocal leader right now, but it all comes down to they've had something amiss in their engineering side, or probably in their simulation side, that was causing them to bring cars to the track that were not competitive. And now that it seems like, and you know, we'll see how this plays out at the next few mile and a half, 2 mile tracks, but it seems like they've got their hands around what it takes to make this new package go fast on the intermediates.
Yeah, to my knowledge, Larry McReynolds was kind of paraphrasing or explaining what Kevin Harvick had said in, I believe it was his Happy Hour show last week. And it is kind of interesting, you know, that, I mean, Harvick's obviously never ran at Hendrick. Yes, they had the alliance there with Stuart Haas a few years back. The first couple years Stuart Haas was in existence. You know, a couple years ago. Regardless, I don't know. That's kind of a path I wouldn't want to go down, because Harvick's obviously a very credible driver, but I don't know. That's a scenario where I'd keep my mouth shut. But maybe that's just me. But Neff, I really was impressed with Jimmy on Sunday. He, like I said, he ran in the top. He probably should have won the first stage. Joey Logano got by him in the pits. William Byron also ran really, really well. He tied his best ever finish in sixth. Chase, he kind of fell off throughout the race. He was really strong. Looked like the best car in stage one. And then Alex Bowman had kind of a disaster of a weekend, but that was a backup car too, as he crashed in qualifying after posting the seventh fastest lap in round one. So, I mean, they should be, I guess, confident maybe now, because they put a whole weekend together.
Yeah, I mean, they at least got to feel better.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're confident yet. Had they been mixing it up at the front for stage wins and the race win, then confident maybe. But just having a decent finish or a decent weekend, you feel happy. Let's give them happy that they're at least feeling like whatever they've been working at or whatever they're working on to try to get better is showing some fruit, and they're not trying things, because there is nothing more frustrating than going to a racetrack and spending hours changing different things and trying different things, and every time you go out on the track, you're still slow or you're not as fast as you think you should be, and there's not improvement, and you're busting your hump trying to throw anything you can that used to work with the last package. And now you try it with this package and it doesn't. And that can be incredibly frustrating. So knowing that they're doing some changes and going down a path that seems to be yielding speed, I agree. I don't know that I'd give them the confidence word yet, but I think it should give them some reason to at least be happy.
Yeah, maybe more so, maybe the better word was like relieved because of how poorly the season had started for them. Sure, Chase had the second place finish last week, but I mean, Jimmy got his first top five, Neff, since the Coke 600 this past weekend. That was Memorial Day weekend last year.
Last year, yeah. No, it's... He's... And now, if I remember right, he didn't have a top 10 over the last, like, 15 or 17 races last year. I mean, he's been god-awful.
It's just, it's crazy to think about. Anything else on Hendrick before we kind of move on?
No, I think we got to. I think they're, like you said, they're just kind of, we're seeing fruits of labor, and I think they're headed in a good direction. Let's see if it continues to play out.
All right, now if I want to ask you about Martin Truex Jr., because you brought him up earlier. We talked we talked about the 11 and the 18 earlier. Truex started the year. I mean, he had a second-place finish at Atlanta. He had a couple good runs, a couple eighth-place finishes, a couple second-place finishes. Martinsville is a little bit of a struggle. We thought he'd be better there with how strong he was with the 78 car over the past couple of years. But I really thought he'd be pretty strong this past weekend at Texas. And I mean, he led 10 laps, but that was kind of through pit strategy. And he just ran outside, you know, from like 9th to 15th, the whole race, finished 12th. What's going on there?
I have no idea. If I knew that, I'd call Cole and tell him so they could fix it. It's a change of location. It's a change of venue for the team. And I think it's just been a matter of, yes, they were in alliance with Gibbs, but they did their own thing in Colorado. You know, they were in the competition meetings. They talked on a regular basis with the JGR folks, but they did their own thing and had their own group when they were in Colorado. Now that they are in Huntersville, the process of building cars and getting cars prepped is a little different. And I don't know if Cole is more or less hands-on now than he was. I don't know how the process works. I know it's different. And I feel like it's just been a matter of they're still acclimating to this process and building their cars to the way Martin likes them is taking a little while to get used to. But I have no doubt when you've got a guy that's a series champion that has won a lot of races in a short period of time. I mean, yeah. he's had a lengthy career, but his success has really been in the last few years that they'll get it figured out. He and Cole know what they're doing, and they know what they want to feel, and it's just a matter of getting that feel. And right now they're still working through the process of how to make that happen in the Joe Gibbs framework.
And again, maybe we're just beating a dead horse, but he's seventh in points, which, you know, very respectable. But what surprises me is, you know, he's led laps, a ton of laps over the past few years. Like he said, a lot of his wins have come in the past 3 years or so. And he's only led 14 this year, 10 of which were this weekend through pit strategy. So I don't know what the problem is or what the issue is. Like you said, the relocation from Denver to Huntersville, that could be it. I'm adjusting to all the new people, even though I'm sure they hired, you know, they brought over some people, same people too. There's going to be some kind of transition. But if you look at it, I mean, the 19 car over the past few years, I mean, yes, Daniel Suarez was in it and he was very young at the time, very, you know, new to the series, hasn't run particularly well. With Carl Edwards before Suarez, it was respectable. I mean, obviously made the championship four in 2016. But it kind of seems like the stepchild of JGR, in my opinion. It always has.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old story everybody likes to tell at Hendrick about the 5/25 being the test car, and they always get the redheaded stepchild equipment and all that. It sounds good, but I mean, if you go to their shop and if you talk to the people that work there, until they put the wraps on the cars, they don't know whose car is going to be whose. And every car there is made the same way, goes through the same process until it gets to the finish side. And then when they do finish, they change it a little bit to the preferences of the team. But I think it's more just a matter of still acclimating to a new environment and learning how to make the cars function the way they want to in this production environment.
Agreed. Quickly, I want to talk about Team Penske because it looked like they were going to be fast, you know, throughout the weekend. Logano led 8 laps, won the first stage. Ryan Blaney led 45 laps. And Keselowski, we couldn't tell if he was going to be fast because he had a mechanical issue so early in the race. What are your thoughts on that? You think that, you know, Brad said after the Atlanta win that they can risk, and we've seen this in the past, they can risk with aero stuff or, you know, stuff under the car suspension-wise because they're locked in the playoffs. So do you think that was just something? Because what happened was what? The rear axle broke pretty much, is what Larry McDonald kind of said on the race during the race coverage. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of interesting that him and Blaney, who Blaney looked like he blew an engine, both had issues in the same race, and they both were pretty fast.
Yeah, the engine thing, I think, is just, it's so rare to see an engine blow anymore.
It is.
That one of two things happens. Either you get a rash. I'm trying to remember who it was. Like 3 years ago, one of the big teams came out on a weekend and like three of their four cars blew engines. And they went through and did a diagnostic and figured out that they got a bad batch of valve springs. And so they threw all those valve springs away and they got new ones and everything was fine. Generally, when you get one now, it's more of a fluke in a piece, whether it's a rocker arm or a valve or whatever, that had a weak spot and it failed because of a flaw in the material rather than a flaw in the engine. And I don't know that Blaney's anything to worry about. Keselowski, I feel similar about that. If it's an axle that broke, I don't know if there's anything that you monkey with an axle other than possibly there's ways that they can do camber and caster on the rear ends of these cars with some shims that kind of change the way the axle meets the drive plate at the tire, and it could be that they push something hard there that ended up shearing something off at the end. But for the most part, again, that's more likely a flaw in a material than something crazy they were doing. But I also agree with you when you say that they can do things and they can take chances. And they may have been trying something way outside the box, but I think it was more of a failure of just the material than it was something that they did.
Yeah, I mean, if I were Blaney, I'd be frustrated. Not so much that you don't have fast cars. In fact, the opposite. He has very fast cars. He just can't get the finishes. Whether it's crashing out of Daytona or getting, you know, I think he had two flat tires at Atlanta or Vegas. And then this week, he was pulling away from the field, honestly. And we didn't really see that, you know, much of the day of leaders having a big lead. But he did. And then he blew up after he came into the pits because he was off sequence with the other teams. But he's led 195 laps this year, which is the most a driver's led without winning so far. Obviously, we've only had four winners. I don't know. We go to Bristol this week. He obviously led a lot of laps there last year in the spring race and got caught up in a wreck. So I feel like he's knocking on the door. That win's going to be coming fairly soon, I would imagine.
It seems that way. I mean, And last year was the same way for him. He had a whole bunch of races, especially early in the year, where he was fast and just circumstances compiled against him. And I feel the same way. I feel like he's one of the more talented of the younger drivers. I think he's got an incredibly level head on his shoulder and gives amazing feedback. If you're listening on his radio, his feedback is very precise. He makes it very easy for his team to work on his cars. And I think when you get somebody that gives you that, the end result is fast cars that can win. And I think it's just a matter of time before they get on a roll. And again, he's one of those guys I feel like you could see win 5 out of 9 races or something during a stretch.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that'd be karma because he only has 2 race wins in his career. The Roval and then Pocono. He should have probably at least, I don't know, 8 or 10. He's given a bunch of wins away, which is kind of tough to watch. I'm sure it's demoralizing for him to a degree. You think of like Texas 2 years ago. He started second, finished 12th, and it was a pit call that by Jeremy Bullens when he was with the Wood Brothers. He led 148 laps, won the first 2 stages, but it was a pit call. I think there was a caution towards the end of stage 2 where they elected to stay out and get the stage point rather than get the victory. And then you think of Bristol, like I said last year, Daytona 500 2018. All these wins, Martinsville last year, led 145 laps. It just seems like he can't seal the deal. And I don't know, that's something I guess we got to watch kind of going forward, because it's been a theme so far I've seen. I think he has 133 starts, and it's just been a theme of, I don't know, what I've seen so far. And obviously, I mean, you can't help a blown engine. If an engine's going to blow, it's going to blow. So that's just bad luck. But I'm with you. Blaney's got a lot of talent, and I do think he's one of the best of the up-and-coming drivers.
Yeah, I echo your beliefs. I think he's got great talent. He's had some bad luck, and I honestly thought when he got his first win, he was going to rip off more. It may have just been unfortunate timing that other people were faster than he was, because he was still knocking on the door for him. And pit road has been a common theme today on the podcast. We've talked about Harvick, we've talked about Hamlin. Both guys are notorious for having issues from time to time on pit lane. And the same thing's happened with Blaney. He's had either pit road issues with his crew or with the strategy calls, and it's bit him. But the things go in cycles, and the time will come when they get to the top of the cycle, and they'll rip off a bunch. I have a lot of confidence in that.
Enough. We had a triple header this past weekend, so I want to talk about anything Xfinity or trucks.
I thought the Xfinity race was really interesting.
I did too.
I mean, I know Kyle won, but it was because of a late race twist of fate that he had a shot. He wasn't going to win if it wasn't for that late race caution. And there were a bunch of different strategies at play, and different people were doing different things, and I like that. And we saw some Xfinity regulars up there mixing it up. We saw some guys taking chances that paid off or didn't pay off. And in the end, I thought it was an entertaining race. So I didn't have any bones to pick about that one. I thought in general, Texas always tends to deliver, and I didn't feel cheated this weekend either. I thought the whole race weekend was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, you can definitely tell the difference in the aero package from the Xfinity to the Cup cars, because in the Cup race, if you're, you know, on the side of someone going into the corner, they never got loose underneath the driver. But in the Xfinity race, like, you think of Cole Custer, Brandon Jones. Brandon Jones was pretty tight on Cole Custer's right front, and Custer got loose, and the two went off Salen into the wall. It happened a couple other times in that race too. I thought it was a really good race as well. I mean, yes, Kyle won, like you said, but probably shouldn't have. Christopher Bell probably should have won. Or, I mean, it looked like Chase Briscoe was going to win for a little bit, even though he's running in eighth to 15th the whole race. And then all the drivers are going to have to pit, but there's a late caution for Jeremy Clements being stalled on pit road. So had that not happened, we might have had a surprise winner, because Kaz Grala was right there, who had enough gas, we believe, to go to the finish, Austin Cindric, and a couple other drivers. So a lot of drivers, too, had good runs. Jeb Burton, that comes to mind, finished fifth. Really good run for Jeb. Feel like he needed that. Got super emotional in a interview after the race with PRN. So I don't know, I guess it's good. Definitely good to see kind of newer names at the front. You see Jeffrey Earnhardt finished eighth with Extreme Concepts Racing's first race ever. And then you had guys in the top 15 like Josh Williams and Ronnie Bassett getting their best career finishes. So overall, good race in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I agree, man. It makes me feel old, but I know I'm old. But seeing guys like Jeb and Ronnie, you know, and Daniel Hemric and Byron as well, guys that I've been watching since they were running in Legends cars. And these guys are running Cup races now and doing well. And it feels good seeing these guys that are working at it. And especially like Ronnie Bassett. I mean, I don't know how many people are aware of the Bassett story, but they race out of their own shop. I mean, I know he's now moved up to a team,
DGM.
But even at the K&N level, they were running out of their own shop behind their house, and going out and running and beating cutback teams. And he and Dylan both have got some great talent, and I would love to see both of them catch on with some organizations that could put some decent equipment under them, because I think both of them have the capability of winning. They, you know, they're just a great, fun family. They've been around racing forever, and they do it because they love it. And I always enjoy seeing people that get into racing and stay in racing because they love it, not because they're chasing some financial dream, you know. And that's why I love a lot of these guys that are coming up in Xfinity these days, because it seems like, and you know, maybe blinded, but it seems like there's a handful of guys right now between Jeb and Jeffrey Earnhardt and the Bassetts that don't have a giant bankroll behind them, but they're still getting a shot, and they're getting a shot in halfway decent equipment. And that does my heart good, because as we've seen in the commercials, names are made in the Xfinity Series.
Yeah, it's definitely a true statement. I mean, you look at all the current drivers in Cup, and I mean, dating back probably a decade now, all those drivers, for the most part, except for Tyler Reddick, who just won a title, and even he made a start in Daytona 500 this year, are now full-time drivers in the Cup Series. So, Neff, I'm going to throw you a really broad question, though. And if you want me to answer first, I will, because I know my answer. Who do you think is the most improved driver this year in any series?
Most improved driver in any series.
I'll go first, since I have mine up and I had a topic in mind. Man, I can't believe how well Michael Annett's doing this year. I really can't. He's had 4 top 10s in 6 Xfinity races. An average finish is 7.5. He's led 50 laps. 2 top 5s. Obviously the win at Daytona. It kind of baffles me because of how bad last year went. He's got more top 10s this year than he did all of last year in 6 races. So I know there was like 3 or 4 Xfinity teams that, you know, full-time teams that shut down that were really competitive last year. But even still, like this past week, he finished 6th, and he's just been running consistently towards the top, I don't know, 6 to 8 all year. And so I think, you know, he's had a lot of hardship in his time in NASCAR, whether that was in the Cup Series or Xfinity back in the day. So he's overcome a lot, and he's getting an opportunity with Junior now, and he's making the most of it this year.
Yeah, and that was an interesting thing at Daytona, and listening to a lot of the people around him talking about where he had come from and where he was, and how he had gone from, I don't want to really label him as a steering wheel holder, but basically a steering wheel holder to a racer. And I think he now truly believes that he can get the job done. I mean, he'd had a win or two before in some support series or whatever, but I really feel like that Daytona win, and even coming into Daytona, I think he was just far more confident in himself and in his abilities because of the faith that Junior and Kelly have put in him. I think they've had discussions with him, and they've talked to him about, you know, what he's doing and where he's at in his career. And I think he just approached this year differently. And I think he truly, you know, I don't want to make it overly dramatic, but it's almost like he's become a man. You know, he's made that transition from being an order taker to an order giver. And I think that has just really, I think that's a lot of why he's doing better this year.
So is he your pick, or you got someone else?
I mean, it's funny because I go look at his stats, and his stats don't really bear it out as much. But McDriver, I mean, Michael McDowell has just been, I don't even know if I want to say better. He's just been different this year. He's just seemed to exude more confidence this year. And, you know, we saw the scrap with Suarez and qualifying, and And there's been some other things that have been posted and quotes coming out of him that just weren't things that we got out of him before. And I just feel like he's got more confidence than he's had in the past. And even though his average finishes down a little this year, probably after seven races, he's at a 25.4, which is his worst since 2015. But he's already tied for most top fives in his career, which is one. I mean, he's had one season in his career where he had two top tens. So he's already got one. You know, it's a matter of, I feel like, front row in general, going to three cars and having McDowell just feeling more confident about their equipment. I think in the long run, we're going to see him. Again, I think a win out of them is still a stretch outside of a plate track, but I think you're going to see more top tens and maybe even the occasional top five out of McDowell just because of where he's at in his life's journey. I think he realizes he's at 34 years old and it's time to get it done.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, he's definitely been more in the spotlight this year, whether it's from incidents, you know, with Joey Logano after the 500 or obviously the pit road scramble with Suarez at Phoenix. He's had a lot of bad luck this year. But this past weekend, he ran really, really well. Really ran the top 15 the whole race. And I think that was his first top 15 finish on a non-plate track or maybe even a road course since last Texas spring race. So, yeah, definitely a step in the right direction this weekend for the 34 team. David Reagans ran okay, too, at times. I think he had a 16th place finish at Atlanta. So I think that's a good call. Like you said, the stats don't reflect it because he's had a couple finishes outside the top, you know, 30 even. But yeah. But our Mike Massey from Front Stretch had a really good interview with him last week where, you know, McDowell was super honest, saying this fiery passion is the guy he's been for what, 10 or so years that he's been in the sport, and he's had to be that way or else he would have got booted. And he's seen that with other drivers. You know, they don't have that passion that he has, and they're out of the sport now. So I would definitely go check that interview out. It's a Behind the Cockpit with Michael McDowell. Good interview with Mike Massey. So, yeah, I mean, any final thoughts enough on Texas or let's preview Bristol, because I think this week, man, the speeds there this week are going to be insane, I think. I heard Jeff Burton on an NBC podcast last week say that he thinks they're going to be running upward of 0.3 quicker than even just last August. So if that's the case, that's going to be interesting because they're going to be hauling the mail around that track.
Yeah. I mean, my closing thoughts on Texas, they always do a great job. Eddie Gossage and the gang down there, just, they get it. He learned under Humpy Wheeler, and he just has a good time promoting stuff. And they make it fun to go to the racetrack, and I appreciate what they do. And they're always trying to make the next one bigger and better. So hats off to them. Bristol, the last great Coliseum, is going to be... I'm honestly curious to see if we have drivers have physical issues this time around.
It could be crazy, yeah.
Because I honestly think you're going to be pulling so many G's from the speed that we're supposedly going to be running that it could go back to IndyCar at Texas a few years back. I don't know if you remember that or not, that yeah. They were going so fast that guys were literally getting dizzy, not from the going in circles, but just the G forces applied to their heads in the car. And from the sound of it, I think we may be getting there with this package this weekend. It'll be interesting. I still love Bristol. I love the new Bristol more than the old Bristol. Not the greatest fan of the traction compound, which we saw again this weekend at Texas too, but it does. I like it at Bristol because of the fact that it wears off during the race, and it causes the racing surface to change throughout the day. And I like how that is the closest thing that we get in the Cup Series to running on dirt, because the the surface truly changes during the race, and guys have to change their line and search around for speed as the race evolves. And that's, I love that about dirt racing, and I think it's a cool thing about Bristol with the traction compound. So I'm with you. We're going to see some banana speeds, and it'll be interesting to see if we actually have drivers have physical issues because of the amount of G-forces they're pulling in the corners.
Yeah, I saw a quote from Brad Keselowski, too, that he said something similar to that, and he thinks it's going to be like a World of Outlaws race, like a dirt race. So if that's the case, that'll definitely be interesting. But something that we didn't do last week now for the first time, I think, since we kind of started this podcast was we didn't make predictions. So who you got winning this week? We got a doubleheader with Xfinity and Cup at Bristol.
We still have the Bush, do we not?
No, he's gone. He doesn't race again until August 3rd at Watkins Glen.
I thought he was in Xfinity this weekend. Nope. Cool. Well, that's good, because we were going to have to put the rules on it. We couldn't have him anyway. let's see. I will predict that Mike Harmon does not try to take down the crossover gate this time, which is still one of the most horrific wrecks I've ever seen. And the fact that he just kind of stood up out of the car and walked away was one of the weirdest things that I've ever seen at a racetrack.
That was unbelievable.
And do we have any Cup guys in this weekend? I'm going through this whole list, and I don't think I see anybody.
It's a Dash for Cash race, so no.
I forgot about that. Cool. Then I'm going, God, I don't want to cop out, but I'm going Christopher Bell. I mean, it's just, again, the way that track lays out and how the compound changes during the race, it favors dirt guys. So you got to be looking. Actually, I'm going to back up on that. I'm going to take Tyler Reddick.
I saw that coming.
Reddick has been flying. I thought he was really going to have a shot this weekend. And as I mentioned, dirt, I'm going to go with Reddick instead of Bell.
Who you got, Cup?
Cup-wise, I think Kyle Busch is pissed about not getting his little 3-race sweep at Texas, so I think he's going to come out and smoke him like a cheap cigar.
It's crazy to think that Kyle's already had 2 opportunities for the sweep this year in all 3 series. Yeah. It's unreal.
He finished 10th on Sunday, his worst finish of the season in, what, 15 starts?
Yeah.
15 starts?
Yeah, that's so bananas. That is crazy. 15 straight top 10s to start the year. Xfinity, I'm going to go Justin Allgaier only because they haven't gotten off to the best start this year. Only a few top 10s and really haven't run up to the standards that I thought they would perform. You kind of see like the 2 of Reddick and then the 20 of Bell. They're kind of in their own league right now. And yes, you had Custer win California, but he's had some issues too. So I'm going to go Allgaier, get his first win of the year. And for Cup, you went Kyle Busch. I'm going Kurt Busch. I think he wins his first race with the Ganassi. He won the August race there last year with Stuart Haas. The Busch brothers are really good at Bristol.
Yeah, and Kurt has always been good at Bristol. And, that's probably a really good call. I can see him easily pulling that one off.
Yeah, indeed. But we got Jeb Burton coming on the show talking about his 5th place run at Texas Motor Speedway. So let's get to my conversation with Jeb Burton. All right, Jeb, you started 6th and finished 5th in the Xfinity race this past weekend at Texas. Your first start in the series since Chicago last June. Overall, just take us through your weekend as a whole.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. We started off in practice. We had pretty decent speed and just built on it from there. We qualified 6th and ended up 5th, so it was a really good weekend overall for State Water Heaters and ALSCO and Ultimate Hitters. It's definitely been fun. So looking forward to the next race at Charlotte.
Yeah, and obviously JRM is one of the Goliaths in the Xfinity Series. But when did you realize that you really had the potential to run top 5, at top 3 at one point, battling for the lead, and, potentially even winning the race?
Yeah, when that was going on, I was happy because I knew I was right where I needed to be. That's what I've been working so hard on for the last year or so, just getting back in something good. And there we were, and team did a good job all day, and that was a fun moment for sure, for everything we've been through the last couple of years, and to be back in good equipment and have a shot to win. That was a lot of fun. So I think these next four races are going to be fun for us, and we're working hard to get a couple more added to it.
Yeah, and you've always run well at Texas in the past, especially in the trucks, getting both a win and a pole there. I know it's a lot different because of the repave, but how much of a confidence boost was it knowing that you've done well at a certain track and going there, you know, even though it was a repave for the first time with JRM?
I would say it was a little bit of a confidence. I've always ran well there. I mean, the track's totally different now.
Right.
I mean, that's really the only thing that was the same was the grandstand. But yeah, I've always ran there. I've got a win there, a second there, and a pole there. Always been fast there, so you know, just fits my driving style, or it's just the luck of the draw, right? It was definitely fun racing with JRM. I'm really happy to be there, and we're working, like I said, hard to have some more races there this year.
Yeah, and like you said, that was your first time at the repave at Texas. Obviously ran well, but overall, do you enjoy the current layout compared to the old track?
I like the new layout. I think turn one definitely makes things more difficult at the racetrack. I like it, to be honest. I liked it a whole lot better when I was in a good race car than when I was. I think it's one of those things, if you're in a good piece of equipment and it's handling well, you like anywhere you're at, right?
Right. That makes total sense. Now, I mentioned a little bit ago how your last race in the series was Chicago last June with RCR. I know it's been a little longer than you wish it was, but how challenging is it stepping into a race car after not, you know, in a certain series after not being there for so long? Granted, you did run the Cup race last weekend in Martinsville, 2 weekends ago, but how challenging is it stepping into a car and getting into that rhythm?
It's tough. It's definitely not easy. I didn't have any simulator time or anything.
Really?
Definitely is not easy, but I'm surrounded by a good group, and I just have to watch a bunch of footage and go off my past experience and study real hard and try not to make any mistakes. That's all I can do is perform at the best I can and not make any mistakes. And if that means finishing ninth, that's what we got to do. So, I feel like I've matured a lot as a driver over the years, and I feel like I'm the best I've ever been. If I could race more with these guys, I feel like we could run for a championship. So we're working hard to make that happen for next year.
And a lot of drivers talk about the simulator and how important and valuable it is. Obviously, from an outside perspective, other than race car drivers, we don't know that. So how valuable is it? And I guess, you know, how much more prepared do you think you would have been had you have gotten simulator time?
I think it's valuable, but it didn't change me from going to win the race. I'd like to do it as much as possible, especially help Chevrolet whenever I can, but I didn't have that opportunity, and I've kind of set out this year to prove a point that I belong out there and to get my career back on track. So that's really all I'm focusing on is just performing at the highest level I can every week for my team and my sponsor and just focusing on me, man.
Yeah, and in the past, you ran, you know, just last year with RCR, in the past, Turner Scott, when it was in its heyday, I think in 2013, the Xfinity Series, but never been in that elite equipment at JRM. Obviously a good opportunity, but what do you learn about yourself when you step into a ride and getting some of the best equipment in the series?
It's a lot of pressure.
Really?
Getting equipment like that don't perform, it's not good. It doesn't look good. It's no different when, people go to Gibbs or they go to, it was Chip Ganassi, the 42. If you get in those cars and you don't run well, it definitely doesn't look good. So you have to put all that behind you, and it's still a race car, right? I've been in good equipment before, and the car not handle well and doesn't run well. It's still got a handle, no matter what team you're with. and you just got to dig deep and hard and make it feel like you want it to.
And I know after the race, you got emotional talking to PRN and Pit Road, and I kind of feel like I know where this answer is going to be, but where did that emotion come from within you?
Well, I think it just came from, it's been a tough road for me. It hasn't been easy. Nobody gave me anything. And it's just been, I don't want anybody to give me anything, right? I want to earn it and do it the hard way and the old-fashioned way, and that's the way I'm doing it. But at the same time, it gets tiresome and it's tough, man, finding the sponsorship. I do 95% of my own stuff with my own sponsors. I do it all, and I go out and beat the doors down and try to raise the money to do this, and it's my career I've chosen, right? So I'm the one that needs to be doing it. So, man, it's emotional. You know, I care about racing so much. It's all I think about. It's all I want to do. And when you get that close to winning and how hard it's been, you don't know when the last race is going to be your last, right? If you don't have sponsorship, you don't race. It doesn't seem like anymore. So it was a great day for all my partners, State Water Heaters, Alsco, Ultimate Hitters. It was wonderful to have some spark back and energize my career a little bit. And we're not done yet, man. We're going to keep digging.
Yeah. And you mentioned how you don't want anything handed to you, and how it's been a tough go. But who have you been able to lean on for advice over the past couple of years or so?
I mean, really just my family.
Really?
My family's been there for me through it all. And some other people in the industry have been there for me. I mean, it's tough, man, to be honest. When, you know, I've been through it all from, like you said, being at Turner's and had the whole world there and the sponsor get ripped out from under me. Ever since then, it's been tough to find a home. I've never been at the same race team twice. And I've never been to the same race team 2 years in a row. And that's tough to build chemistry and do all that good stuff. I've said it a couple times on here, but we're trying hard to be at JRM full-time next year. That's what we want to do, go chase that championship, because I feel like with the tools that Kelly and LW and Dale and Mr. Hendrick have there, we can go run for a championship, no problem, and I'd love to do that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that there was pressure coming to JRM for this race and four others at least this year. But how much are you able to lean on the other drivers within the organization this week, being Justin Allgaier, Michael Annette, and Noah Gragson?
Yeah, I talked with Michael and Justin a little bit, and I talked to Noah some too. But the biggest thing, you just got to get out there and do it, and you can kind of lean on them a little about what way you think the track's going to go and stuff like that. But the other day in practice, I knew the car was going one way, but I didn't know how bad that was going to end up in the race. If I'd have been racing all the time, those are the kind of things that I would have known, and I could have made my car better for the race, so we maybe could have won the race. So those are the fine details that show up when you're not racing every week.
Yeah, and when it comes to the 8 car specifically this year, obviously there's a plethora of drivers competing in it. I find it ironic that the best finishes so far have been by yourself and Ryan Truex, both in just one start. So you mentioned the pressure, but do you expect to be in contention for the win every time you step into that equipment and kind of thrive up to that pressure?
That's the only reason I went there, is to win races and get my career back on track. So, it's still a race car. Sometimes we're going to miss a little bit, but I have full confidence in that group. Taylor Moyer, the engineers, the car chiefs, the mechanics, they're a fun group to work with. And if I had to pick a race team right now, I'd be ready to go. So I'm pumped up about Charlotte. They're building me a brand new car, and they're excited to have me in the car too. So we're really gelling really well together, and it's something special there, and I think we can go win some races together.
Yeah, and you mentioned how, you know, it's hard to build chemistry when you're not with the same team 2 years in a row, which, like you said, you've never been in the past. But do you feel like this is the best position you've ever been in outside maybe the truck deal in 2011 or 12 or back then?
I think so. I think for my partners, they're extremely happy of being at Junior Motorsports. We're working on some new partners now. And, you know, Dale has been helping a lot as much as he can with my partners, and that's really changed the game for me. And the performance on the racetrack already is proven we need to be there. So it's a great place to be, and I'm so thrilled where we're at. And you know, all the down times have got us to this point, and everything's uphill from here, and we have a bunch of confidence, and things are going well right now, man. I'm really pumped up about Charlotte, and I'm pumped up about the future at JRM too.
Yeah, and you kind of led into my next question for you, but how much support has Dale shown you through this process? I know on the Dale Jr. download this week, he had some, you know, encouraging words for you. So how much support has he shown you?
Well, I haven't seen that yet. I guess that was on the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it. I'll have to check that out. But, yeah, he's been really encouraging. You know, we've always been somewhat friends. I mean, we text back and forth the last couple of years, but we became a little bit closer now, obviously, since I'm racing for him. And he's been real supportive. I mean, if it's just social media, I mean, helping with my sponsors. You know, I just want to make them proud, man. They've got a great team there, and they built something really special, and I just want to do my job behind the wheel and go win some races for them.
Now, currently, like you said, you got those four other races on the schedule: Charlotte, Indy, Texas, and the end of the year at Homestead. I'm curious, why those tracks?
Well, they were good for my partners. Really, I've ran well at all of them. Really, ran good at Indy with smaller team before, and Texas, obviously, I've always ran good there. Miami, I should have won a truck race. Charlotte, I've got a pole, almost a win in trucks, so I've always ran good at all those tracks, and at least they're not totally different. You know, if they were, right. One was a road course, one was a short track, one's a mile and a half, that's no consistency there. So at least every time I get in, we're going 190 miles an hour.
Yeah, and other than those races, do you know of any other Cup, Xfinity, or truck races this year, or not yet?
I don't know yet. I think Rick at Rick Ware Racing, we've been talking some. He might want me to run a couple more races for them. And, you know, I'm willing to drive. I just got to have the opportunity, and whatever I can get behind the wheel of, man, I'm ready to go. But at the same time, we're working really hard to run some more races at JRM.
Yeah, and I'll get you out of here on this one, Jeb. You mentioned how the goal next year is to run full-time with JRM in the Xfinity Series. Now, we recorded the body of this podcast on Tuesday, but I'm recording this with you on Wednesday. And earlier today, the Xfinity and truck schedule for next year came out. I'm curious to get your kind of thoughts on it on the Xfinity side, because obviously Martinsville, one of your home tracks, being added to the schedule for the first time in a long time. Other changes as well, whether it was Mid-Ohio being moved up to the end of May, or the Pocono, you know, moving back a little bit on the same day as the Cup race on Sunday. What are your thoughts on the schedule as a whole?
I think they're doing a good job with it. I'm super excited about Martinsville, my favorite track. I think we can definitely go run for a win there, no problem. I'm excited about that, and I'm excited about NASCAR making some changes. I think that team, Steve O'Donnell, Ben Kennedy, they're all doing, Mr. Phelps, I mean, they're doing a great job. They're doing really good, and I think they're listening to the fans, and I think 2021 you're going to see even more of a shakeup. Get rid of some of the mile and a half to one race, and then go to the short tracks. I think that's going to be where it's at, and the fans want it, and they're getting it, so I hope the fans support them.
Yeah, I would definitely bet on that, too. Jeb, thanks as always for coming on the show, and we'll see you in Charlotte.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much.
All right, y'all. Really insightful conversation there with Jeb Burton. I truly believe he's got a ton of talent behind the wheel. But funding's the name of the game, always has been, always will be. And unfortunately, like he said, he's working hard on finding partners daily to go along with those existing ones he currently has. But it was truly awesome to see that pure motion on his face Saturday after a solid finish, where he really ran inside the top five pretty much the whole race. That's it for this week's podcast, guys. Make sure to tune in next week where we review Bristol. It's always an entertaining race, so this one should be no different. We out.